Right, I think we'll get started. I hope everybody's enjoying Ignite so far. My name's Daniel Beaubyers, and this session's about Windows 10 for the consumer. And what I want to show you is why you should upgrade your world to Windows 10. Now, Windows 10 was released about a bit over a month ago now, and I talked to a few people in the audience. Now, can I get some hands up? How many people are running Windows 10 at home? Not as many as I thought. This is good. How many people are running Windows 10 in their enterprise? A couple. Excellent. So look, Microsoft have really changed the way they do things with Windows 10. And the first thing I want to talk about is Windows as a service. So with Windows 10, Microsoft have announced that they're no longer going to do operating system releases. They're going to move to this sort of continuous release cycle, where when new functionality is ready and tested, they'll release it out to Windows 10. So what does that mean for us as the consumer? Well, we're probably unlikely to see a Windows 11 or 12. We're probably not going to see a Windows 10.1 or a Windows R2. But what we are going to see is new functionality released every couple of months into Windows 10. Now, the Windows Insider program, and I'm going to talk about that in a couple of slides, those insiders in the room will already be running a different version of Windows than was released, and new functionality has already been released. So Windows and Microsoft are making good on that promise. And they call it Windows as a service because it's very similar to software as a service applications, where new functionality is released every couple of months. The next thing I want to talk about is, and Microsoft's never done this before, they've released Windows 10 for free for the next year as a free upgrade. You have to be running Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, home or professional, and obviously it needs to be legitimate. But I think this is fantastic because we can all get up to the latest version of Windows at really no cost. Now, the last big thing I want to talk about is the Windows Insider program. How many people in the room are Windows Insiders? Excellent. So when Microsoft announced sort of November last year that the first preview builds of Windows 10 were available, they also announced this Windows Insider program where consumers and professionals, IT pros, could register to become an insider and be able to download pre-release builds of Windows 10. Now, this program proved so popular that just before Windows 10 was released, there were 5 million Windows 10 insiders. Now, those of you with sharp eyes will notice my session title says 3 million. That's because in the gap between submitting my slides to Microsoft and Windows 10 being released, 2 more million people signed up. And in fact, since Windows 10 has been released, another million people have signed up to the Windows Insider program. So if you're keen to test out these new features, understand what's coming, jump on and register to be a Windows Insider. Microsoft have a server in the middle of Microsoft called, it's a website called Master Control, and it takes all of the telemetry information from the Windows Insiders, all the feedback. There were 6 million pieces of individual feedback from Windows Insiders leading up to the Windows 10 release. And Microsoft staff can log into there and they can see each build and all of the feedback that people have put back, all the questionnaires they've filled out, what's working, what's not working. I've been an insider since November last year, and despite Microsoft's recommendations not to, I've been running it on my production laptop. I don't know what that says about what the work I do and how productive I am or not, but it's been fantastic to see the changes occurring within the operating system based on that feedback. In fact, I was talking to someone in the audience who had the same story in terms of feedback they'd given back and then seeing the next build, that feedback incorporated into it. So what was Microsoft wanting to achieve with Windows 10? And Joe Belfiore in the keynote touched on these as well. What were the design goals that Microsoft had for Windows 10? So the first design goal Microsoft had was mobility of experience. And I think we see this in Windows 10 in the different hardware devices that Windows 10 runs on, from cell phones, laptops, two-in-ones, all the way up to there'll be releases of Windows 10 for Xbox One, HoloLens, and the Surface Hub coming along. Because it's the same operating system across all of these different devices, our experience roams seamlessly across these devices. Our browser favorites follow us, our Groove music. Even things like favorites we set in the mapping application follow us across all those different devices. The next design goal was trust. And with Windows 10, Microsoft have released Windows Hello, and we saw this in the keynote. I was amazed at how fast it is to log in with Windows Hello. And I'm not too sure if you saw, there was a news article 2 weeks ago where they did a test with identical twins to see if they could fool Windows Hello with identical twins. They couldn't. It could tell every single time the right twin. But it's not just Windows Hello. Microsoft have also released Microsoft Passport, which is a system that stores our passwords securely on the device using the hardware encryption built into our laptop. But it's the little things as well. Cortana, the personal digital assistant built into Windows 10. She holds a notebook on us of the information that she stored about us. But we can go in and we can look inside that notebook and we can see what she's storing about us and we can remove it if we don't want her to know those things. When Microsoft released Windows 10, they also made changes to Microsoft Family Safety. Now I'm interested, how many people in the room use Family Safety at home? A couple, excellent. How many people have heard of Family Safety? About the same people, I thought that would be the case. So I've got a few slides coming up where we'll talk about this because that's a fantastic feature or service Microsoft offers, which is completely free. The last design goal Microsoft had was natural interactions. The way the OS adapts itself to the characteristics of the device, and Joe showed us when we unplug our keyboard from our Surface, the way the screen reformats to be more easily used with one of these as opposed to a precision pointer that we have on our device. I love the way that, and I've been testing this out at home, I can sit down with Windows Hello and it logs me on automatically and I can say, hey, Cortana, show me my schedule. And she shows me my schedule. Sometimes she searches the internet for me, as Joe demonstrated, but it's just a really natural way to be able to interact with Windows 10. So I thought we'd jump out of the slide deck for a few minutes and just go across some of the base functionality in Windows 10. So if I get this right. Excellent. So Joe showed us some of this in the keynote, but I also want to take some of it to the next level. So as we saw with Windows 10, I think we get the best of both worlds. On the left-hand side of our start menu, we get our application listing, just like we're used to in Windows 7. And in fact, I can scroll down the bottom here to all apps. Is that showing on the screen? Excellent. And I can see all of the applications that I've got installed on my laptop. Looks a little bit different than Windows 7, but it's very familiar. Now, on the right-hand side, we have the tiles that were introduced in Windows 8. And again, we can interact with these tiles. We can choose whether we want the tile to be a live tile or just a static tile. We don't want to see that content. And we can resize our tiles as well. These are all things that we're used to if you're used to Windows 8, which are new if you're coming from Windows 7. We can also resize this too. So we can make our start menu as big and as small as we want for how we like to work. So I think we get the best of both worlds with that. Now, Joe talked about task view. Task view is a way that we can see the applications that are running on our desktop. There's a couple of different ways that we can get to that. We can click on the task view icon down the bottom, but those of you with a touch screen, we can also swipe in from the left-hand side of the screen, like we used to with Windows 8. Or we can go Windows tab to bring that up. Now, with Windows 10, we also get multiple desktops. And I think this is great because I like to work with a bunch of applications laid out in a certain way. So I can have multiple desktops with different applications. And if I hover my mouse over, I can see what's running on each of those desktops. And it's so easy to just add a new desktop hand, I can take this app and just drag and drop it onto another desktop and open it up in full screen mode. There we go. So, also want to talk about snapping. With Windows 8, we're used to be able to sort of snap our windows around. And if I go Windows arrow, I can snap it across the left-hand side. What Windows 10 gives us is it says, hey, you snapped an application. You probably want to snap something to the other side of the screen. So it prompts up and says, what would you like to snap to the other side of the screen? So I'm going to choose the Maps application. Now, this is a universal application. In Windows 8, universal applications didn't really interact with our desktop the way we were used to with our native applications. With Windows 10, that's changed. Our universal apps now look and feel exactly the same as a native application. But if our screen resolution's high enough, we can also now do a four-way snap in Windows 10. So it makes it really easy to be able to snap those different screens up. Now, I've been using shortcut keys for this. I've been using the Windows key and the arrow keys. But of course, if I want to, I can use the mouse as well and do like we're used to doing, just nudge it up to the top of the screen. Now, Joe showed us how to easily switch between desktops using Control and Windows. And I must say, I showed this to my son earlier in the week, and he's 8 and mad on Minecraft. And I went into the kitchen to start doing the dishes, left him with his report assignment. I thought, I can hear Minecraft music playing in the background. So I walked back into the living room, and I must admit, oops, we'll get the right key combo. Don't fail me now. There we go. I saw the screen flicker as I walked back into the room, and I thought, the report doesn't have a title yet, doesn't seem to be making any progress on this. So I walked back into the kitchen, as parents do, and snuck back round to have a look. And sure enough, he'd gone into Xbox. And I got the last laughs, though, because, and I'll tell you about family safety in a minute, he has some screen time set. So he ran out of time to be able to do his assignment that night. So I had this really awkward dad moment of going, do I let him fail his assignment because he's mismanaged his time? Or do I give him more time and reinforce the fact that it's okay to muck around? Luckily, my wife saved me that decision, and I got sent back to doing the dishes. So the next thing I want to talk about is the Action Center. So we can get to the Action Center by clicking on this little speech mark sort of icon down the bottom, or going Windows A. Now, if we're used to swiping, if we've got a touch screen, we can also swipe inside from the right-hand side of the screen. Now, the Action Center is a place where stores all of the alerts that have popped up on our device. So all of those icons that pop up on the right-hand side of our screen, we can go in and have a look at what they were. And it's also a really quick place to be able to go and do shortcuts to items. So we'll go to all settings in a minute, but I just want to put this into tablet mode. And again, Joe showed us some of this stuff, but I just want to talk a little bit behind it. So if I put this into tablet mode, immediately all of the icons disappear from my taskbar. And when I go to my start menu, it goes into full screen mode. Now, don't worry, I can still get to the applications if I want by clicking on the side here. The other thing that happens is all of my applications go into full screen mode. Now, the reason Microsoft's done that is trying to manipulate Windows, again, with a not very sort of, with a stubby finger like mine, is quite hard. So if you don't have a mouse connected, Microsoft have said, right, it's going to be easier if we just default to that full screen windowing that people are used to in Windows 8.1. So if you're on a machine and it's got a keyboard and mouse and you're going, why can I not minimize any of these windows? It's because it's in tablet mode. So we'll go in and we'll change this back out of tablet mode. The next thing I want to show you is all settings. So with Windows 10, the control panel's still there, but Microsoft have slowly moving all of the settings to this new settings-based application. And I really like it because it's clean and easy to use. Now, for those of you who loved the full screen start menu in Windows 8.1, we can click on personalization, and we can go start, and we can turn that back on. We can say use full screen start menu. So, because I know that some people did really like it. A lot of people didn't, which is why Microsoft have changed it. The other thing, it's really easy to be able to find settings in here. So if I type in, spell it correctly, storage, I can very easily get into my storage settings. Now I can click in on here, and I really like this as well. I can see what's consuming my disk space. I get a nice graphical view, and it will enumerate in a minute, but we can see that I've got about 15 gigs of applications and games. So some of these things, my recommendation to people is click around in Windows 10, because sometimes things don't look like buttons, but actually you can get down and get more information. The last thing I want to show you from a consumer point of view is the new Phone Companion app. So Microsoft have written this application to help us essentially pair our phone with our Windows 10 device. And with this new Microsoft that we're dealing with, embracing all of these different platforms, it's not just about pairing a Windows phone. We get instructions for Androids and iPhones as well. So if I click into here, we can see it's going to give me the instructions on how to download the different Microsoft applications to my phone, which I think is really cool of Microsoft. And from a consumer point of view, it just makes it easier for people. Right. Let's leave that, and hopefully I get the right button. So the next thing I want to talk about is Microsoft Family. So this is what Microsoft Family Safety has been renamed to. Now, Microsoft Family is about keeping our younger users safe and providing an age-appropriate experience when using our Windows devices. Now, as I said, the service is free, and it's been around for a number of years now. But with Windows 10, Microsoft have made some enhancements. They've built a lot of the functionality into Windows 10, so we don't have to install the additional software. But what does it allow us to do? So as parents, we can set parental controls on our children's accounts to control where they're allowed to go on the internet, the applications they're allowed to play, or use, the games they're allowed to play, and my favorite, the amount of screen time they're allowed per day. Now, with Windows 10, Microsoft have also turned on roaming of these settings. So we can configure these settings, and any Windows 10 device that our child logs into with their account, these parental controls will follow them, which I think is fantastic. Microsoft are also updating the Xbox parental controls and merging it into the Microsoft Family settings. So there's one place in the future you'll go to keep your children safe on Microsoft devices. And because I'm really passionate about making sure my 8-year-old and 6-year-old are having the right experience, I just want to show you how easy it is to set this up. So we'll switch across to desktop 3. Now I've logged into account.microsoft.com and I've gone to the family tab. And I've logged into my son's account, Finn. Now, Finn's mad on Minecraft. So the first thing I see is his recent activity for the last 7 days. And if I scroll down, we're going to see, 57 YouTube videos, 79 YouTube video sites, 57 Google video. Ah, he's been to WordPress. And I can drill in. There we go. And I can see, right, he's visited his friend's WordPress site who's traveling at the moment and his school WordPress site. That's okay, I'm happy with that. And I can scroll down further and I can see the amount of screen time he's used each day as well. Now if I scroll back up, on the left-hand side here, this is where I can configure what's appropriate for Finn. So if I go to my web browsing, the first thing I can do is I get this block inappropriate websites. Excellent, I want to turn that on. And I get two choices. I can do whitelisting or blacklisting, basically. I can say, Finn's only allowed to access these websites, or I can say, I don't really want them to access these websites. And I can have these reports emailed to me every week, so I can go through, and if I see something I'm not too sure about, I can block that. And in fact, if I scroll down, you'll see, for some reason, he was going to the Rug Doctor website. I think it was an ad on YouTube, but he's got no reason to be looking at Rug Doctors, so we blocked that. I'd love it, actually. I think his mother would love it if he did the carpets. Right, apps and games. We get the similar sort of look and feel. Block inappropriate apps and games. But here, I can set age rating. So Finn's 8, so I've set it for 8, and these are the settings that that's then going to configure in terms of what he can access. But again, I can override these settings. Finn needs to use Word to do his school assignments, and Word doesn't have an age rating associated with it. So when he clicked on that for the first time, a bar pops up on the screen, and it says, this application is blocked, you need to request access to it. So Finn requested access, and I got an email through that said, you need to approve Finn's access to this app. Now, if I was standing there, I could also put in my password and approve him access on the spot. And if I disagree with any of the ratings, I can block applications as well. And as I said, my favorite is the screen time settings. And I can say at what time in the morning he's allowed to log in, till what time in the evening, and how long he's got. And I can give him top-ups if I'm feeling generous, but it kind of works quite well. And it pops up with a 15-minute warning. So at the moment, what that seems to mean is he watches YouTube videos for 45 minutes, and then he gets the 15-minute warning and then tries to squeeze his homework into 15 minutes. So we're having a chat about time management at the moment in our household. Okay, but it is really that simple to set up these parental controls. Yes, you need to use a live ID. That's, I guess, part of the deal with this. But Microsoft are continually enhancing this, and there's some new functionality that will be released in the next month or so, which is going to make this an even better experience. Right, let's cut back to the slides. You have to set it as a child's account, and it has to be nested under your account, but yes. Yeah, they do. And that's, I think, some of the things I've seen Microsoft talking about is changing going forward. But that multiple identities is, well, I could speak a whole session about that. It's a big issue that we have at the moment around, what is our identity? Right. Changing the theme a bit, I'd like to introduce you to Cortana, the personal digital assistant built into Windows 10. Now, as Joe said, Cortana hasn't quite made it to New Zealand yet, but she's on her way. Now, Cortana started her life at Microsoft as the ship's AI built into Microsoft's hugely popular Halo series of games. Now, in Windows 10, she looks a little bit different. And I have to say, she's more interested in helping us schedule our day than saving the galaxy. But how does Cortana work? Well, Joe kind of showed us this in the keynote. We can ask her questions. We can actually configure Cortana to listen out for "Hey Cortana." Or we can click on the microphone, or we can type questions or commands into Cortana. And she responds in kind. So, because we might be in a meeting and we might be wanting Cortana to do something for us, if we type something into her command bar, she'll just respond silently, because we don't want Cortana popping up in our meeting, disturbing everybody. Well, some of us might actually, but and if we ask Cortana a question, she'll come back to us verbally as well as visually. Now, sitting behind Cortana is the power of Microsoft's cloud services. Cortana uses TELMES, natural language processing, to understand what we're saying, and that's a technology Microsoft purchased a couple of years ago. And she uses Bing, and there's a knowledge base called Satori that she uses to answer these sort of general knowledge questions that Joe was showing us yesterday. So, but what can we get Cortana to do for us? Well, she's designed to be a personal assistant. So she does the things we expect personal assistants to do. She helps us with our calendar. We can book appointments, review appointments, set reminders. We can set alarms, emails, music. She can help us find directions. She can track flights, stocks. But she's also really good at searching through our data. And again, Joe showed us this, that we can look through and look for content on our machine on OneDrive. We can also give her access to Office 365, and she can look in our Office 365 mail and our calendar. Now, like all good assistants, Cortana wants us to have the right information at the right time. And we see this with some of the reminders that Cortana pops up for meeting requests. She'll look at the meeting reminder, and she'll try and present us relevant information around that meeting. Things like how long it's going to take to get to the meeting, but also if there's any attached material to the meeting notes, the meeting request, she'll pop that up for us as well. And I talked about the notebook that Cortana keeps, and I think this is actually really key because this is the first time I've seen Microsoft release a technology where we can go in and actually see the information that's being recorded about us and go in and decide whether we want that information stored or not. And right on Cortana's main bar, we can click on this little notebook icon at the top there. We can go and see the accounts that we've given Cortana access to. And under these different categories, we can see the information that Cortana's storing about us. Like I said, we can go and remove that information if we don't want to know that stuff. Now, Microsoft are continually teaching Cortana new things. And one of the things they did is they integrated Cortana into Microsoft Edge. Now, Joe showed us this, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I just find it really helpful because normally what I do is go, I'm searching for something. I don't quite know about that. I need to go and do another search to find out about that. But now I can just highlight that text and right-click and go Ask Cortana. In this case, I highlighted Microsoft, and she's got a sense of humor. She's told us, hey, that's where I was born, and then given us some information about Microsoft. So why did Microsoft release this new browser? Well, yes, Windows XP turned 20 years old 2 weeks ago, but at the same time, Internet Explorer turned 20 years old as well. So although Microsoft done a great job of keeping Internet Explorer relevant, the reality is there's 20 years worth of legacy technology sort of stuck in the bowels of Internet Explorer. So with Windows 10, Microsoft have taken the opportunity to build a brand new standards-based browser. But the other reason, I believe, is because Windows 10 runs on such a wide variety of devices that Microsoft wanted a browser that was going to look great and run really well on 4-inch cell phones all the way up to 100-inch displays. So to be able to do that, Microsoft needed to completely sort of change the layout of that browser to make it a very clean interface. These aren't the only things that Microsoft have changed with the browser. Microsoft Edge is fast, really fast. Its current independent benchmarks put it as one of the fastest browsers on the internet. And it's really secure as well. Microsoft have dropped ActiveX support and browser helper objects. These were two technologies that software vendors used to put toolbars into IE. Now, how many people have been called up by friends or family with that, help, I've got 16 different toolbars and everything's running slow and I just wanted to install that app. Yeah, look, it happens, right? So with Edge, all of those vectors for attack have been removed, which hopefully we shouldn't get those phone calls anymore. I like the ability to be able to mark up the web pages within Edge. And I'll do, in the demo, I'll take you through this. And Joe kind of talked a bit about it as well. But what I used to do is I used to go into the snipping tool and take a screenshot and then try and highlight it and mark it up. And I could never get text where I wanted it. And in the end, I'd just sort of print it out. And some poor person would get this printout on their desk with my scribbles all over it. And I think I should have been a doctor because my handwriting's worse than doctors. So they'd invariably come back to me and say, what are you on about, Willis? So Microsoft, again, have just thought about what are things we could do to make it easier for people to use our product. The other feature Microsoft have added is a reading view to Edge. Again, it strips out the ads on either side. It spaces the text out more for us. And it changes that background color to that sort of slightly yellowy color, which is a little bit easier on the eyes. And I've been playing around with this for the last couple of weeks. And I actually find it a much easier experience reading the technical articles that I read. But what about the other applications that come with Windows 10? Because Windows 10 runs across such a wide variety of devices, Microsoft have refreshed most of the other applications which come bundled with Windows 10. The Mail app, Calendaring app, the Maps application, Film and TV app replaces Xbox Movies. They've made changes to the Photos application. Groove Music replaces Xbox Music. And my son's favorite, the Xbox app that we'll talk about at the end. So just running quickly through these, Microsoft have made some tweaks to Mail in Windows 10. We get POP3 support back again. So in Windows 8.1, Microsoft removed POP3 support. Much to the chagrin of my parents, who, you know, still have that POP3 email account with Extra, who couldn't do their email anymore. So that's been added back, which is rather nice. And Microsoft have also taken away the sort of swipe in from the right-hand side requirements to access some of the Mail toolbars. Everything's kind of where we expect it to be now, at the top of the screen. We can also customize the swipe commands when we swipe over messages in Windows and Mail for Windows 10, which makes it a bit easier for us. So the Maps application, this replaces Bing Maps on Windows 10, and it's been completely rewritten as a universal application. This means it's the same app across all of our different devices. So if we set a favorite location or we chart a route on our PC, and then we step out to the car and we're on our phone, that same information will be available on our phone. Now, one of the things I really like with the new Maps app is I can download maps for offline use. So if I'm traveling somewhere, especially overseas, and I don't know if I'm going to have internet access when I get there, I can download those maps that I need so I can get to my hotel at the other end. The Photos app, Microsoft have added a couple of new features that I'll call out. So now the automatic enhanced photos is enabled. Now Microsoft doesn't change the images, it just means we need to be aware. When we're viewing our photo albums, the Photos app will show us the photos in their enhanced state if it feels it can enhance those photos. So if we like what we see, we just need to save that. Otherwise, when we send a photo to someone, they're going to see a slightly different version than we saw, because we can see the enhanced version. It also looks across for linked, what they call linked duplicates. Now, I've got 35 gigs worth of family photos. I'm not very good at managing them, so I have lots of different copies. And I think this is fantastic, because now rather than having six pictures of the kids all doing the same thing, I just get one picture, and I can click in to see where all those other linked pictures are. The final feature I'll pull out for the photos is this album auto-creation feature. So what the Photos app does is it looks across your photos and it looks for photos that have been taken at about the same time. And it takes those photos and it creates an album automatically of those photos. And Microsoft have gone one step further. They then look, Photos app then looks for what Microsoft calls the hero photo. It looks inside the photos in the album and it looks for the photograph that has the most faces of the people that appear in your photos in that album. And it takes that photograph and puts it as the album art cover. So for those of you like me who take lots of photos but don't necessarily manage them very well, this is a great way to make those photos more accessible for people. Film and TV application. As I said, this replaces the Xbox Movie Service. And it's fully integrated into the Microsoft Store. So we have one place now to go for our content. Again, the application's been rewritten as a universal app and cleaned up so that it's much easier to use with one of these, as well as a precision mouse pointer. The other thing Microsoft have added is MKV support for our local files. So as well as being able to purchase from the store, we can also look across our local store. And as MKV is quite a common format nowadays, it was something that a lot of insiders requested, which Microsoft added to the application. Groove Music, this replaces Xbox Music. And again, we're seeing a very similar look and feel across these apps, because they've all been redesigned to have that sort of new look. Now, Groove Music uses OneDrive to synchronize our playlists across our different devices. And if you were a Xbox Music Pass subscriber, you're now a Groove Music Pass subscriber. And Microsoft have also made some changes to the music streaming. So we can now stream over the internet. So you can go around to your friend's place, you can log in with your credentials to the website, and you can stream your music over the website at their house. And we can download music up to four devices of our choosing, which is pretty cool. I think when I took the screenshot, it was $12.99 New Zealand a month for that service. So the store. In Windows 8.1, the store was only about accessing applications. In Windows 10, we have a new store which gives us access to all of our content. Apps, games, music, movies, and TV. And it's much easier to use than the previous store, and I think looks much nicer as well. So I've saved the best till last. With Windows 10, we can now play Xbox games on our Windows 10 device. And not just play locally, we can play these games on the Xbox Live network against players using Xbox 360s or Xbox Ones. My son thinks this is really cool. So how does it work? So we've got sort of two modes this works in. Many Xbox games can be installed directly onto our Windows 10 device, and we can play them locally. But there are some Xbox games that are locked to an Xbox One, and we have to play them on an Xbox One. So what Microsoft have done is they've built in the ability to stream games from our Xbox One over our local network to our Windows 10 device. And we can even plug our game controller from our Xbox One into our Windows 10 device. Now, I think this is fantastic. Because how many people in the room have an Xbox One? A couple. How many people have it plugged into the big telly in the lounge? Yep. So in my household, we have this discussion on a Saturday night. Does Dad get to watch the news on the big screen, or does Finn get to play on the Xbox? Now, when Windows 10 came out and I got this working, we no longer have that discussion anymore, because I get to watch the news on the big screen, and Finn gets to continue to play his Xbox game, but streamed to one of our Windows 10 devices. It works really well. So what does the Xbox app look like? Now, Xbox Live has over 50 million members, which makes it one of the largest social networks on the internet. So as well as being able to play Xbox games, the Xbox app's all about that social interaction, chatting with friends, keeping up with people's activity feeds, their achievements. And a really popular thing which is occurring is being able to view video clips that people have uploaded. It's becoming really, really popular. And the Xbox app doesn't just allow us to view video clips. And this is where I think Microsoft have done something really cool. They've built into the base of Windows 10 the ability to be able to take video clips of the Xbox games that we're running on our device. We have this toolbar called the DVR toolbar that pops up, and we can go in and we can start recording our game. And Microsoft have also built in what's called a video buffer. So let me explain, I guess. We're playing our game, and you never know what's around the next corner, right? So you go around that corner, and suddenly you're in the most epic battle scene ever. And you're trying to hit record, but you've kind of missed the start, and it's not really a very good video clip anymore. So what we can do in Windows 10 is we can configure a ring buffer. So we can say, continually record the last 30 seconds or the last minute of gameplay. And then when I hit record, I'm going to get that last minute of gameplay as well as whatever gameplay I continue to capture before I stop that video clip. So no longer do we miss that start of that epic battle scene. We've always got it there for us. So I thought we'd jump in and have a look at some of these. Now, I'm not the best gamer in the world, so hopefully I can record a few seconds of gameplay without being killed by some villager that I seem to have annoyed in Minecraft lately. So let's cut across. Let's just get this sorted first of all. So the first thing I want to do is, I noticed when I was looking before that Finn managed to get himself an hour and a half of screen time I must have been feeling very generous on Sunday night. So I just want to go in and make a note. So if I click on this make web note, and Joe sort of started showing us this in the keynote. I can click up on here. I want to send myself an email checking this out. And as we saw Joe do, check this out. And now if I go up to the sharing icon, and this is, I think, really cool. Edge remembers who I've emailed previously. So it's popping up and it's saying, hey, you've practiced this demo a few times, Dan. Do you want to email Daniel at Bowbuyers? Yes, thank you very much. So that's going to pop up. That's taken a screenshot of the complete web page, plus my markups, plus the notes that I've written down, and I can then send that to myself as a reminder. So that's way simpler than trying to take a screenshot, putting it in somewhere else, and trying to put notes on it. It just makes it so much easier. So let's exit back out of there, and let's go across to desktop 2. So, the Xbox app. So, as I said, I'm not a huge game player, but on the right-hand side, we have all of our friends that we're associated with, whether they're online, whether they're offline, and our activity feeds. As we go down, we've got the games that we've got. I mean, Solitaire, who can go past Solitaire, right? And we've got Minecraft here too. We have our messages, so this is, we've got chats going with people. We can see all of the different chats that we've got going on. And if we're in a party, this is where we can also see the party chat as well. And then our achievements, Pinball, and our video clips. Now, I can go into these video clips and say this one here, I want to be able to share this one on the internet. What I can do is, but I want to trim this up first. So I can click in and I can trim this, and let's take it from there to there, right? And I can go save a copy. And there we go. I've now got my trimmed video clip ready to share on the Xbox Live network. So super easy to be able to do within the application. I'm going to risk the demo, and let's see if we can actually capture a video and show you how easy it is. So if we go play, and we'll choose this world here, and excellent, it's at night, so hopefully we don't get killed too quickly. I'll bring up the game bar, and I'll click record. And we'll head on down. We've got a cow. I think even a cow killed me last night when I was testing this out. And we'll just shoot across to see if we can find. There we go. A villager and a spider. And we're going to sync too. Right, that'll make a good video clip. So let's grab that and stop that. And we'll cut back over here. So all things going well, there we go. That's how easy it is to be able to catch a video clip of our gameplay. I can then go and I can edit that and then share that out. So really simple things to be able to do. Now, I've chosen Minecraft for this because a lot of schools are using Minecraft as part of the teaching curriculum. So how many people here sort of know about Minecraft? Cool, everybody. And have people read because I've got an 8-year-old, the Minecraft survival manuals, which take you through all the different gameplay and how to make circuits and those things? So a lot of schools are using Minecraft because with the logic circuits you can build, it's teaching kids about programming, about XOR functions, flip-flops. You can even build a 16-bit computer in Minecraft. Now, whoever figured that out, they probably should be doing something more, but it's something that schools are really embracing, that whole gamification of items. All right, let's cut back to 5. So, for those of you that have not done so yet, upgrade your world to Windows 10. I think it's a great world to be in. And for those of you that have already upgraded, hopefully I've shown you something about Windows 10 that you haven't seen yet, or clarified some things for you. Hey, look, I want to thank you all for coming today. Now, look, there's heaps of Windows sessions on, Windows 10 sessions at Ignite over the next couple of days. I've called out a few. If you're interested in seeing more about Edge and the enterprise, there's a session at 9 p.m. Tomorrow morning. If you're interested about upgrading Windows 10, there's a session on tomorrow at 10:40. And for those of you I talked about Azure AD, I'm running another session, a technical session, on Friday at 9 a.m. about Azure AD Join. And if you want to be really mean, you can come to our Ask Us Anything session at 1:55 Friday and ask us really hard Windows 10 questions that we'll try our best not to answer for you. Hey, look, if you want to learn out more about Windows 10, Microsoft Virtual Academy is a really great place to go to. And all of these sessions will be up on Channel 9 in the next couple of days. Please complete your evaluation forms if you can. There's some spot prizes to be won. And as a speaker, it's really great to get your feedback back as to how I can improve going forwards. Thank you all again. Those of you that want to get in early for the lunch lines, go for your life. If those of you want to ask me any questions, feel free to come up to the stage, and that'll let the people that are hungry get into those lunch lines. Thank you so much.